Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb. Today, I'm joined by Anna Francisco and Scott Keith. We are, I don't even know how many weeks it's been where we've been recording by distance for shows now. But we're going to keep at it. And along with recording by distance, we've been seeing an influx of listener questions sent to the 1517 website. Those have been getting sent our way. And we're going to go ahead and answer some of those in today's episode because we have so many. I think I've been sitting on 30 various questions.
Jeez Louise.
Or not. And so I think we're gonna try to tackle those to the best of our ability today. If you are looking for material to watch or listen to during this time because you've binged through everything you want to watch on Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus and all that, we've been doing new series on our YouTube channel. You can go to YouTube, you just type in 1517, the channel pops right up. If you go and subscribe there, you know, you get easy access. You can even hit the notification bell there and you can be notified when new episodes show up. We have done series now on the Formula of Concord, on the Decalogue. The new video podcast, Talks with Dad Rod, is up on there. And we're steadily increasing the amount of regular YouTube content we do. So if you haven't been aware of that or you haven't gone and checked that out, it may be worth your time. All right, guys. So first question. It was a good one because it alerted me to something I didn't know about. So apparently when we moved over to the new website, some of the links that used to go to apologetic episodes when we did the first series, don't go anywhere anymore. They go to places on the old website. So I'm going to have to go back and find those. So thank you to the listener who made me aware of this so that I can go correct these. But I thought in the meantime, the person was, you know, looking for further reading, apologetics-wise, maybe looking for further listening and watching. And I thought, hey, why don't we, you know, we've got a lot of new listeners since last time we did a full-blown apologetics series. Why don't we just offer, you know, 5 or 10 apologetic resources for people who are looking, who have maybe listened to all the episodes that Thinking Fellows have offered or trying to hit links, and turns out for the last couple of months we've had some dead links on the website.
Yeah, go Adam.
You're talking book sources, right?
Yeah, books
or videos or
whatever you think, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put a plug in for a couple of the books out of 1517 Publishing. Most recently, Josh Pagan, Paul and the Resurrection. And then just before his book was published, a much more comprehensive apologetic is by David Anderson. We interviewed him, 3 months ago, I think?
We did.
That book is Faithless to Fearless. And then there's an older book, The Resurrection Fact, from, that's 2-3 years ago now. But in terms of general, like a kind of an introduction to apologetics, if Dr. Rosenblatt would hear, he'd probably say Jim Sayers, Why Should Anyone Believe Anything at All? And maybe C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity as introductions. And then there's, I think Dr. Rosenblatt puts a plug in quite a bit for a very good series. It's dated in terms of, meaning it was done a long time ago, 50 years ago, perhaps, but still very relevant. It's the series by John Warwick Montgomery called Sensible Christianity. Do you want me to keep going on?
I mean, I would stop for a second and talk about the Josh Pagan book, which is the title's Paul and the Resurrection, right?
Yeah, that's a very specific apologetic argument. It seeks to address the question evidentially, why believe Paul at face value?
Yeah,
and it's addressing scholarship that says Paul's cooking something up, or
I really enjoyed this book. It's not very long; it's 100 pages or less.
Yeah, I've got on my shelf here.
And it's interesting to me because it does the lunatic liar Lord, but obviously not the Lord part. Essentially, methodology applied to Paul to examine: is he lying? Is he crazy or is he reliable? Is the way it gets presented. And I thought it was very good. It interacts with some modern critiques of the Pauline epistles and the assertions from the Apostle Paul. And so I think it actually may even be helpful to people outside of specifically the realm of apologetics, but even just general New Testament scholarship who may be working with particular outside readings of Paul that who from outside of Lutheranism that they don't quite know how to address in easy to comprehend ways. And I think this book does an excellent job of that.
Yeah, I just checked the page count. It's like 80 pages in terms of the actual text itself. It is, and again, a very particular, precise argument. But yeah, you can sit it, read it in one sitting, and it's good. It's a monograph, if you will, a scholarly monograph. Yeah, and then David Anderson's book, Faithless to Fearless. Are we recording the video of this? This doesn't go on YouTube or anything.
No, we're not recording the video.
Okay, because I'm holding the book up to you guys.
Oh, that's what it looks like.
That's a much more comprehensive, evidential apologetic in the style of John Wark Montgomery, but a little more specifically minimal facts approach to apologetics, in the vein of Gary Habermas and Michael Lacona. But the interesting thing about Faithless to Fearless is it takes these sort of traditional evidential historical type of arguments, but considers the evidence in light of recent, if you will, developments or scholarship in like neurosciences and decision theory and things like that. So it's really, you know, one of the things with reading a lot of apologetic works is you see there's just a lot of the same stuff being churned out. With Faithless to Fearless, there's a lot of novel things that I've never considered before in thinking about apologetics. And it's done by David Anderson, who's a CEO of a software company. So that's his world, marketing and why, you know, how it is that people make the decisions they do and so on. So he's a good friend of 1517 as well.
Yep. No, that's a good book as well. I enjoyed reading it, and we actually have two episodes we did with David on the book too. So I'll link those in the show notes. You can also, if you listen to the Thinking Fellows and you happen to have missed those, I think you can actually search Faithless to Fearless, because that's what I named the episode, and you should be able to pull that right up.
Yeah, your dad and I cut our teeth in apologetics in Dr. Rosenblatt's classroom. You know, not just, we had a course in apologetics, but then there was like philosophy of religion, analytic philosophy. I can't remember all the different titles, but I'm pretty sure that the apologetics class pretty much followed the outline of Montgomery's Sensible Christianity.
Yeah, I think it did.
So, yeah, and but I think that's just a solid base from which to do apologetics.
Yeah, with some sort of classical stuff thrown in just for, you know, because you have to kind of know some of that. But I would,
and that's kind of the that is a distinction I think people are picking up on here, is that 1517 doesn't do. I mean, we've done episodes on it, even on the Thinking Fellows, about some of the classical apologetics, you know, just arguments, philosophical arguments for the existence of God and things like that. But we tend to lean more heavily on the evidential argument, and particularly how that pairs up with the evangelical nature of Lutheranism, and how it's an apologetic that answers questions that arise after preaching.
Yeah, I think, and for the non-Lutheran listeners, I'd maybe say too, maybe for Lutheran ones too, is that we don't do a lot of sort of the presuppositionalist deconstruction of other worldviews as a precursor to either proclaiming or defending the gospel. We usually start out with proclamation, and then when questions arise, use sort of the evidential method to talk about the claims of Christ, the veracity of the scriptural text, and that type of thing. I would say, Adam, for the listener that is kind of looking for a little bit more advanced work but still easy to consume, Montgomery's Tractatus, I think it's philosophical in nature, following sort of the methodology of Wittgenstein's Tractatus. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's just an approach to sort of theology and apologetics in general. I think it can be, and epistemology really, can be pretty helpful.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great text. It's sort of, in a way, Montgomery's magnum opus in apologetics, I think is fair to say.
Yeah.
It is, if you're not familiar with sort of like propositional type of writing, it's a bit of a shock to the system. His good friend, another one of Montgomery's students, like Rod Rosenblatt, Craig Parton, wrote a book called Religion on Trial, which is takes the Tractatus or the argument of the Tractatus and puts it in
kind of
very
prose.
Yeah, handy prose. I think that's out of Wipfenstock. I think they're the publisher of that.
Cool. Well, I'll gather the links for those and throw them in there. And then, for the listener who asked that question, well, as I go back and fix those old links, there will now be a new episode with a good amount of the material that we would have talked about and suggested in those old shows. So, okay, so the next one was less of a question, but a podcast idea. And I'll just bring it up because I think we did something a bit like this already that I talked about a minute ago. But we had a suggestion for a podcast that was going through the Lutheran Confessions document by document. And I do just want to address this and put this out there that YouTube series on the Formula of Concord is a start towards this. It's kind of out of order, but...
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't heard the suggestion. I'm just looking at it. I'm like, I'm in. I mean, let me know if you feel like producing another podcast, Caleb, because...
I actually think this would be a fun one. I had this idea. So before Corona hit, Dan Price and I actually had been working on an idea to do a YouTube series where it was going through confessional documents.
Yeah.
And so we thought that would be one of those areas where it would be like podcasts we've done on the Thinking Fellows where we have done Lutheran theology, but in a, just a more direct or reading way. And we've started that, obviously now we've moved to the Decalogue, but there's no reason we can't go back and, do another document from the Book of Concord.
Yeah. And honestly, if you were doing this as the listener suggests here, line by line, it would look and sound different than the YouTube series we did where we sort of took 20 minutes and just did a 30,000 foot overview of each article.
This is more like reading the confessions, even with the listener.
I think the idea here is sort of more like 40 minutes in the Old Testament, 30 minutes in the New Testament style applied to the Book of Concord.
Man,
That would take a while, but I'm in.
We could do that on the Thinking Fellows. I mean, we don't even need to do a podcast. That's right up our alley.
Yeah.
So
I'm there.
I'm cool with it.
Adam's like,
Adam's thinking.
I'm cool with it.
Okay.
All right, let me pull another one up here. Adam texted me before the show, and he was like, not another whole batch of sacramental ones.
Yeah.
Well, but we have to.
I mean, I don't mean to get against the listeners here, but I agree. It's kind of funny. We did the Q&A on Zoom meeting the other night with Rod, and there were 50-some-odd people in that meeting, and so many of the questions were questions that we had done episodes on that I just think, I don't know, I understand the need to keep answering the questions, but it does get a little difficult to answer the same question all the time.
Right. I agree with this as well. We said in that Zoom chat, and I think it would be funny to, because we've said it a lot on the show even, but it'd be funny to run a poll on social media. You can run polls on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that from the Thinking Fellows page and say, what do you think the most common question we get asked is?
Baptism.
And it's at this point, I'd have to like search the emails. It's either baptism or the Lord's Supper.
Yeah, I think it's going to be baptismal regeneration and then real presence, Lord's Supper, and then probably free will.
Yeah, and then probably free will, yeah. Which I think is actually more fun than the other ones, but it's also a little more in the weeds.
It can be.
But the thing here that happens is the more I read some of these emails, and this isn't an accusation towards a particular person. Like I said, I've got several hundred of these in various ways over the years, so don't feel like I'm calling you out in particular. But a lot of people you can tell want to be argued into believing that the sacraments are or do what Lutherans say they do.
So if that's the case, you could almost avoid the sort of sacramental question itself.
Yes.
And just sort of get into something that's a little bit more up our sort of bailiwick here, which is sort of epistemologically, how do you approach the text? Like, how do you approach the text? And what presuppositions are you bringing to the text when you read into them? And to just sort of answer it broadly and then have Adam correct me, I'd say this, that when Lutherans are on their game, we attempt to approach, and let me say this, once that we've sort of come to the level that the text is authoritative and even inerrant and completely trustworthy and everything, once we've gotten to that place, and we've done episodes on how we've gotten to that place, right, that people can reference. But once we've gotten there, you know, what we're attempting to do is to allow the text to speak for itself, to allow the text to say what it is it's trying to say to us and or teach us, acknowledging that we have presuppositions coming into the reading of text, but trying to check those presuppositions yeah. via the acknowledgement process, and allowing, you know, certainly using our God-given reason along the way to discern what the text is saying, but hopefully not bringing our, and I'll say this the way that David Anderson, I think, phrases it in his book on Luther's epistemology, not bringing our philosophies to the text and trying to fit the text into those, which is often, in my opinion, what happens when people sort of are looking at baptismal regeneration and have a problem with it, especially when it comes to sort of like paedobaptism or infant baptism and the real presence in the supper. They have philosophies in place that they try to bring to the text. Some of that has to do with, oh, a child's not old enough to reason their way into what they're actually believing, so how can they be regenerate? Or they were baptized as a child and they fell away as a teenager or young adult. How was it that they were regenerated then?
And I think some of this is helpful too, like you said, with going to other questions. So that actually tends to stem from the fact that we Lutherans in those groups, even though they in theory confess sola fide, actually explain what that means differently, to have faith alone, and how faith is imparted as a gift rather than something you do or
yeah.
reach out and grab.
I mean, so to kind of sum it up a little bit too, is that, so in that case, if the scriptures seem to say to us that everyone is to be baptized and that this is a baptism for the remission of sins and this baptism is a regeneration, we say that's what it is. If this text seems to say to us that when the Lord's Supper is celebrated, that what is given in and received is both the bread and the wine and the body and blood of Christ for the forgiveness of sins, we say that's what it is, even though we can't explain the metaphysics on either side.
Right. Yeah, that was the last serious question we got that was kind of a new flavor, was somebody who seems to have done all the reading, which is commendable. So they had read Chemnitz's Two Natures, had read some other dialogues.
I'm not sure that'll clear this up.
read some debates from the Reformation era and all this, and wanted us to explain the metaphysics a little more clearly. And I'm, you know.
So the last time before our government overlords kept us in our house that I was at a speaking engagement, a very sincere man came to me as I was trying to find some alone time with a cup of coffee. And you know, he brought this on me, and I appreciated it. But at the same time, he ended with, and I think I'll never forget this. He ended with the fact that he said, I just can't wrap my head around how this would work. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I can't wrap my head around how this would work either. But I'm pretty sure that this is what the scriptures teach. And he said, I am too. I just can't believe it.
Yeah,
and I thought, you know, at least you're honest, you know, but I can't help you wrap your head around the real presence. Cause just let me be clear. I can't wrap my head around the real presence. I don't know if Adam can. Metaphysically how this thing would work, where it is bread and wine and it is body and blood, and if you stick it under a microscope, it's going to look like bread and wine even to that level. But the scriptures tell us clearly that if you if you take this without acknowledging the body and blood of Christ in the supper, you're doing so to your condemnation. Christ clearly says, this is my body, this is my blood. Christ clearly says, do this in remembrance of me for the forgiveness of your sin.
Right.
So that's how I kind of, he's it again, if we've done the pre-work, and we have, and we can say pretty definitively that this man was God, then what he says, you know, means more than if I say it.
Right. And the conversation
gets, certainly means more than if Adam said it.
When the conversation gets purely to the metaphysics, it often can get away from what's being imparted. What the emphasis of why we confess a true presence is there. And that's, it's much more simply.
And one of the reasons why Lutherans typically avoid describing our position as, the name is slipping out of my head.
Consubstantiation.
Yeah, consubstantiation. I was going to say is because we don't have a metaphysical explanation.
Correct.
The scriptures don't give us a metaphysical explanation. That was hard. So we let it stand where it is, and that's it.
I would say, as a young student of theology too, that was hard to understand why we don't just say consubstantiation. Because, you know, when you're sort of all hot and heavy into reading all this new stuff, you're just told that, oh, we don't. I get it more now, because it's a rabbit hole from which you cannot dig yourself out of. Once you start using philosophy to explain what's going on here, when you don't really know what's going on here metaphysically, you can't stop.
Yeah. I mean, the Middle Ages, one of the big debates concerning the nature of the Lord's Supper was, well, since the substance does in fact transform, let's say a drop, or a little piece of bread, a crumb drops off.
Falls on the ground.
Wafer and a mouse eats it. Yeah. Has the mouse consumed the body of Jesus? If you have a metaphysic for all this, those questions are all very real, and you can get into those questions, but it gets really strange very quickly. And certainly quite a ways away from scripture.
So, and I'll say, and if I get myself in trouble, what the heck, I don't care anymore. One of my biggest regrets about modern
day. How come you don't have a mask on?
Oh, no.
Yeah, you really don't.
I don't care about endangering.
You just got Caleb. Maxed.
That's why. One of my biggest regrets for modern Lutheranism too is that all too often it seems like those that are engaged, at least on social media, are willing to jump into the metaphysical discussions about this and be definitive nonetheless. And I think, you know, that's just not our history with this. That's just not how we've typically done this. It's not what our dogmatics do. The closest you get to it isn't something like Chemnitz on the Lord's Supper, Chemnitz on the two natures of Christ. Chemnitz was more able than probably most of us to be careful and to know the lines.
When Luther said of Zwingli that he was of a different spirit, what he's saying or was saying is that the whole approach and disposition that Zwingli had to the interpretation of scripture and theology in general was radically different, very different worldviews. Not to say Zwingli was not a Christian. You guys can, the Twitter people can debate all that, but just the whole approach, the whole kit and caboodle was different than the way Luther did it. Luther and the Lutheran tradition at its best is content with saying or confessing to the world what the scriptures confess and stopping.
Right? Yeah. Well, I'll paraphrase the last, we just referenced it, Montgomery's Tractatus. And I guess I'll paraphrase it and maybe put it in my own words, where the scriptures do not speak, the theologian ought to be silent as well.
Right. Mm.
You know, and I think that
our job isn't to speculate.
It's not a job of speculate. You're not, if you're a student of theology, even at the lowest sort of, I don't want to say the lowest level as it's bad, but like, say you're just starting out with this on your own at home. It's not the same as becoming an armchair philosopher. you know, your job isn't speculation. Your job is to read the text and to discern as best you can with the tools that you've been given what the text says.
All right. Okay, so I have an interesting question that actually came in an email that was a critique of the show, which we don't get very often, but I have actually said on episodes, if you have a critique, feel free to send it in.
Is it that I'm too hard on Calvinists?
Oh, well, actually, so it's two-part critique. One is...
So, yeah, that's what it is.
One is that we've made comments on the show. I have made this in particular about... not necessarily backpedaling, but admitting that we are sort of harsh on American evangelical theology.
Oh, okay.
And the one is
granted
an affirmation that this person believes they have heard disparaging remarks against evangelicals over and over and over again on the show.
I would grant that.
I actually think we could answer why that is. Like, it's not just like a inherent dislike of a people group, right?
So this isn't Calvinist specifically?
No.
Reform?
And in fact, I mean, I would say, I think Rod would say, and you would say, Scott, and you too, Caleb, that there are evangelical apologists and theologians out there that we greatly admire.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of their commitment, their rigor, and so on.
Well, the Go ahead. Sorry. I would say the irony here is that we get into some trouble at 1517 for allowing... other than Lutherans to have a voice at all. You know, recently, as recent as today,
we've
gotten some pushback from other Lutherans about letting other than Lutheran theologians have a voice in our blogs, at our conferences. But I could see how somebody would say we're hard on evangelical theology, but I think there's a reason for
it. Well, and part of that is, so I guess, a big segment, we actually know that a large segment of the listeners of this show are American evangelicals. I get a lot of emails from them positively, too. So some people are not just hearing us as attacking them individually. And I guess the critiques would not be of a particular person who's at an evangelical church, but about the confession or even the lack thereof of a confession of faith in those churches.
I think any honest person could acknowledge that any critique one might give that has sort of a universal sort of character to it is wrong at some point, right? So if we say evangelicals believe X, there will be evangelicals who don't believe X or don't teach X or whatever, and that they don't apply to that critique. And so I'll acknowledge that. I mean, the reality is there are likely, quote unquote, evangelical churches out there that preach the gospel faithfully, that discern law and gospel, as well as many others. And go down the line, right, that are maybe sacramental, that keep Christ and Him crucified as the center and core of their theology. But in general, I don't think those things that I just named characterize mainline American evangelicalism,
right?
And I think it's difficult to say, well, your critique doesn't apply to everyone when you sort of purposely belong, and I'll say quote unquote belong to a movement that purposely makes itself undefinable,
right?
And so. What I would say, speaking for myself, what I do is sort of just comment on what I see, because I can't comment on what the confession is,
right?
Because there isn't one,
right,
that I'm aware of.
Yeah, with, and that's, you know, as being part of a tradition that has for, you know, 500 years, not fully 400 and something years, essentially confessed the same documents. It's easier for us to go, somebody point at something being done at a Lutheran church and say, that's not Lutheran, or that is, right? We have a set of documents that could be examined that say this is the Lutheran confession of faith. So it's a little, and from our tradition, then you have that. You have something we can debate over that isn't just the way it's practiced. In fact, the way it's practiced can be reflected against a standard, which has been read, interpreted, and confessed for hundreds of years.
Did you have anything, Adam? You're leaning on your mic, so I thought maybe you had something.
No, I think that's good.
Yeah. I mean,
you just up the road from Irvine is Biola University. And there are some, I mean, stellar thinkers up there. Our criticism of evangelicalism is what you just said, Scott. It's also evangelicalism generally, the tradition, if you will, or the culture of evangelicalism does have some, like it's oftentimes it's dispensationalism, yep, and things like that. We would say is, you know, just not biblical.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Or a
reference previous question.
Yeah. I'll stop.
I mean, it's that's the thing is that when Adam and I were undergrads, my biggest critique of evangelicalism was that there was no confession. And that their confession was sort of a confession against confessing churches, where you get this only the Bible kind of movement, which
is actually the other part of this question,
which just wasn't true. I mean, it's you say only the Bible, and then you have rock star or pastors who write books that sell, you know, 2 million copies, and these books become standards, without the willingness to sort of be accepted by a greater collection of these churches as a confessional standard, you know. And so there is probably some benefit to saying only the Bible, but I've always believed that everybody has a confession of faith, and that confession of faith is always explained by somebody. Yep. So you may not hold to the small catechism in your church, but I bet you hold to whatever Pastor so and so.
Well, there's a statement of beliefs on your website.
Yeah,
I mean, so, almost guaranteed, right?
No, that's I don't think we hear that so much anymore. But that was the big one, sort of back in the day. But I think that prevails.
Well, I mean, that was the other part of this question, was essentially the way I don't know if it's a fair critique or not. I actually think we did a decent job balancing this, but is essentially you sound like you're beholden to Luther and Lutheran theology, and you don't critically examine the words of Jesus. I don't know how much merit that is to this, because especially when it comes to like the sacramental stuff, we'll go and we'll talk about the words of Scripture specifically.
Listen, we don't, we're all here in this room, we're LCMS Lutherans. Funny enough, we all hold our membership at different churches now, which is odd, but we are still all LCMS Lutherans, which means that we do not subscribe to, we do not confess everything that Luther ever wrote, right? So on that point, while we find Luther's writings helpful, they are not our confession of faith. It might be as if the person who's writing this has some sort of modern Philip Carey or something, some modern author that they find helpful and that they maybe refer to something that they said now and then, but they don't hold it as scriptural or as their confession of faith. Now, we do have a set of confessions, the Augsburg Confession, the Apology to the Augsburg Confession, the Large and Small Catechism of Martin Luther, called articles, the Power and Primacy of the Pope, and the two documents of the Formula of Concord that we say we hold to because, though, they are in agreement with Holy Scripture.
Right.
If they were not, we would not give them that standard. And so we spend plenty of time examining the words of Jesus, but we also spend some time examining the words of our own confessions, because we think those confessions are accurate exposition of the teachings that are held in Scripture.
And the confessions are, you know, even ask the reader and the confessor of them to draw these questions back to Scripture.
And the confessions do that.
Right.
Time themselves. And time again.
So
examining the words of Jesus, examining church fathers to see if they should be believed on this issue, this is sort of the... When I remember this distinctly, when Adam and I were undergrads, this was sort of the conversation. Do you just believe the Bible, or do you believe the Bible and ... It's easy for me to say, actually, to answer that, I believe the Bible. But I do believe the Bible is, the teachings within the Scriptures are very accurately set forth in the Lutheran confessions, and therefore, because of that, I hold to them as well.
Yeah. I think that's a good, straight, simple answer. I mean, it's I think some of this is there when people from other traditions meet, you can get sort of these easy pot shots at sort of what they believe. I think we do this with Catholics even too, right? You can take a pot shot and just go, oh, so you believe everything the Pope says, huh? And yeah.
Well, I mean, even if you look at 1517 more broadly, we have three very popular podcasts. Those are sort of like our hallmark podcast. It's Thinking Fellows, this show, 40 minutes in the Old Testament and 30 minutes in the New Testament. So 2/3 of those are podcasts that spend all of their time just examining the scripture.
And that was going to be the second part of my answer here. Is we actually have shows. It's not us three on them that are purely reading books of the Bible.
Yeah, and so on verse this show, the hosts are, when there's not the COVID lockdown, Rod Rosenblatt, who I would say essentially did his graduate work in systematic theology, exploring specifically the theology of Martin Chemnitz. You have me. I'd say, you know, there's a historical bent to it, but systematic theology, exploring the theology of the Lutheran Confessions, and Philip Melanchthon. You just Caleb just completed a master's program, or just submitted his thesis for a master's
submitted
program.
Submitted a thesis, yeah.
In systematic and philosophical theology. And Adam did his work at Oxford on examining Martin Luther's teachings regarding Islam. Is that fair, Adam?
Yeah,
so
yeah, I guess.
Historical theology?
No, that's fair. Yeah, historical theology.
So
yeah.
Within this show...
That's what we do.
That's what we do.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's kind of funny. It's not,
I mean, I'm not an exegete. I don't think Adam's an exegete. You're the closest one we got. And when we have a Greek question, we go, hey, Caleb.
Yeah.
So
I can exegete the heck out of the Quran.
Well, yes, you can.
And we do it in talks. I mean, you're not an exegete, but you spend a lot of time exegeting the parables, which we've done on this show.
Yeah.
Is the other thing. We've done full-blown episodes on the parables and on sections of scripture. We could do stories from scripture or sections, but again, we already have a show or two that we don't need to step on their toes that read the Bible verse by verse.
Well, my last three Christful Fast talks have been on parables and the hard sayings of Jesus and things like that. So
I think, yeah, I mean, Thinking Fellows isn't the only thing going on at 1517, is one of the things.
Maybe just the best thing, right, guys?
So if you think, wow, you guys are narrow. You guys just do historical, systematic theology and occasionally apologetics. What's up with this? Well, that's actually the subtitle to the show. And so if you want to see what we've done at 1517 to produce things on the New Testament and the Old Testament, go to 30 minutes in the New Testament, 40 minutes in the Old Testament. If you'd like to see that, even from hosts of this show doing some more stuff like that, we have full suites of conference talks on the YouTube channel.
Which are almost all having to do with sayings of Jesus in one way or another.
Yeah, or even historical theology proclaimed. We have some great ones on there on the proclamation of the gospel, baptism. I mean, all sorts of the talks from Here We Still Stand and the city events are pretty diverse, especially when you include breakouts and things like that in there. People can sort of get into what their expertise is. And that actually leads to the final thing I would say about this, because we've said it before, but 1517 is a think tank, which has theologians, historians, philosophers who have specializations in all sorts of different areas of theology. And one of the things 1517 asks them to do is to share with people, have an outlet to talk about that thing that they've put a bunch of work in their life into becoming an expert on. If that makes sense.
I mean, if this were a political think tank, the people on the people who host this show would be sort of the guys that do the politics, you know, the actual like day-to-day politics. But then you'd bring on economists, you know, you'd bring on people whose specialty is in labor and maybe people whose specialty are in the stock market and that type of
culture,
thing.
Culture, psychology, whatever.
And so, you know, we acknowledge our weaknesses and we try to have those people on the show. And I would say from based on this email, since it sounds like we've just been defending ourselves, we can do a better job of putting the best construction on evangelical theology and try to do better.
Yeah. So, all right, guys. Well, that's 40 minutes. That's right on time. So, and it seems like recording has been going well without a hitch, technically, so that's good. So thank you for listening to this episode of the show. If you have further questions or comments, there's a contact form at 1517.org, or you can send direct messages to Thinking Fellows on Twitter or on Facebook. All right, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode. We'll catch you next time. Bye.